on Talk Radio 98.5 and 1240 WRTA. It's The Buzz with Dr. Z, supported by the Lung Disease Foundation of Central Pennsylvania. Dr. Z is Dr. George Lupko, founder and director of the foundation. Now, here's WRTA's Doug Herentine and Dr. George Lupko.
A quick reminder that we have podcasts of all these programs up at WRTA.com, and Dr. Z has them as well. Dr. George Lupko is with us. Sir, welcome once again.
Well, thanks, Doug. Always a pleasure to be here, always.
And if you have any questions about anything we've heard, and we've done shows like this where people say, hey, could you address this or address that? Just email me, Doug@lightnerradio.com, and we'll pass that along to Dr. Lupko and see if we can do something about that on a future show. But today you wanted to talk about hyperbaric oxygen therapy.
Yeah, I thought it would be an interesting topic. We've touched on it. I think you reminded me that we may have touched on it briefly in a previous show.
We've mentioned it a couple times, but we've never done an entire show explaining the entire aspect of it and what it is and what it can do. We've done it when you were just in passing mentioned, well, this is a treatment for this, this is a treatment for that. But when you mentioned that you're going to do this, my first thought was, well, everybody's going to hopefully not make a joke about it, but at least reference Michael Jackson, because if you remember, the idea was, oh, he's got one of these hyperbaric chambers. And then I noticed looking through things, there are some belief by some people that this will keep you younger if you are in one of these chambers. And I'm thinking, most people are in these chambers for very serious reasons besides anti-aging.
Well, that's correct. And if we get time toward the end, I'll talk about some of the shall we say, off-label uses of hyperbaric oxygen therapy, which do include the use for longevity programs and things like that. But since I did the promo on this, I've had a number of people just stop me in the supermarket or and ask me, well, what is that? What is hyperbaric oxygen therapy? And then a couple of folks actually asked me if we have that available and can they use it and so questions like that. So I think this will be a good program to help enlighten the listeners about what this really is. And so without further ado, let me kind of wade into this because like a lot of things, there's some science to it. And I'm going to try and make it as simple as I possibly can. Hyperbaric oxygen therapy is a therapy that we offer patients with certain conditions where you have to be in a chamber, certainly, or a room that is pressurized, okay? That's the hyperbaric part of it. Those rooms can be pressurized either with oxygen or with air, depends on the situation. And in that environment, you are going to get the benefit of an increasing amount of oxygen in your bloodstream and in the tissues of your body.
So in other words, you're in a sort of space capsule or capsule of some sort. I think I referenced the last time that we skimmed by this, the Apollo 1 incident, where it's a very volatile situation to be in. But if it's in a controlled environment, it should be relatively safe and safer than what they were doing because you're not going to be living in a 100% oxygen atmosphere and turning switches inside an actual hyperbaric chamber.
Yeah, that's really the problem there if we're just take off on that just a bit. In that particular instance, they were in a capsule, a closed space. It was pressurized with 100% oxygen. Now, oxygen does not explode. It's not like a gas that explodes, but it supports combustion. And of course, if you're in a container that has 100% oxygen and you have clothing on and if you have papers around you or anything like that, and there is any small degree of either static electricity or spark, it will cause your clothes or whatever to catch on fire, and the oxygen environment will just make it go up just very quickly. So you're really trapped. In fact, one of the things that we do when we offer this treatment to patients is when they go into a chamber, they have to go in with basically the way they were born, you know, except for some special clothing that we give them that has no static charge, will not develop a static charge. Mm-hmm. And you can't have any perfume on or creams or anything like that.
Even perfume.
Yes, even perfume. We don't want that.
What about somebody going in with hairspray or clone?
No.
That's not a good idea.
No, no. We want you, like I said, pretty much the way you were born. And the clothing we give you does not have any capacity to develop a static charge. And we certainly don't want any metal on you because there's some metal in the chambers.
You're not going to be bringing your phone into this.
No, no. You're going to, if you hit that and there's a spark or something like that, there'll be explosive decompression and we'll expect loss of life at that point.
Yeah. Now, we don't mean to sit here and scare everybody about this, but so you understand that this stuff is volatile, but it's this way for a reason and to have some effect of a medical nature, right?
Yeah, it does. And like I said, the effect of being in a chamber under pressure with additional oxygen or just with air even, and I'll explain why that even works, is to increase the amount of oxygen in your bloodstream and thereby also in the tissues of your body. And how does that happen? Well, if you're really smart about this, you know that our blood cells, our red blood cells, carry oxygen, right?
Yeah.
And you know, when we put that little thing on your finger, the pulse oximeter,
sure,
it measures saturation. It's measuring the saturation of oxygen on your red blood cells.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's doing. Well, your red blood cells, most of the time, are almost, under normal circumstances, normal person, are almost entirely saturated. They're 90% plus saturated. So how do we get more oxygen into your system if your blood, red blood cells are, let's say they get 100% saturated, but we want to go further? How do we do that? How does this do that? And that's what you have to understand about this particular therapy and how it works. What it's doing, you see, the amount of oxygen you have in your blood is primarily contained in the red blood cells. But there's a small amount that's contained in the plasma, in the liquid portion of your blood, the part that doesn't have any red blood cells, just the liquid portion, right? Well, under normal circumstances, that amount of oxygen is very, very small, very small. You couldn't live just with that amount of oxygen in your plasma, okay? But in a hyperbaric situation where we increase the pressure, there's a law. Somebody, naturally, there are gas laws, right? They're just like every other thing, parking laws and such. But there's a gas law. And it says that if you increase the pressure of that gas, in this case, oxygen, on a liquid, okay, the amount of oxygen that goes into that liquid is proportional or is related to the amount of oxygen pressure, okay?
Yeah.
So that means that if we increase the pressure of the oxygen going past the plasma is going to get more. And in fact, the way hyperbaric oxygen really works is by increasing the amount of oxygen that's in the plasma of your blood, not in the red blood cells, because they're already 100% saturated. You can't get any more there. It's increasing it in the plasma of your blood that's carrying it then to the rest of your body. And that's how it gets more oxygen into your system.
Is there a limit to what you can do with that, though?
The limit is how much pressure you can tolerate.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically it. Normally speaking, the pressure limits are reasonable because high pressures can, of course, cause trouble as well. And we'll talk about some of the complications and contraindications of this therapy along the way. But I wanted to make sure that everybody understood how that gets more oxygen into your system. It's by increasing the amount of oxygen in that liquid portion of your blood that normally contains just very little.
Is it the pressure of pushing it into it, or is it the availability of more oxygen in the atmosphere that does it?
Both. In other words, if you're in a chamber that is pressurized just with air, you'll get some in there. It'll be less than if that chamber was pressurized with oxygen.
It's The Buzz with Dr. Z, Dr. George Lupko, and I'm Doug Herendeen from WRTA. We're talking about hyperbaric oxygen therapy today, and we've kind of explained what it is, but where do we pick up from here, and what does it do for us, and why would you consider this?
Well, if you remember in my promo, and of course I know you do, Doug.
I was here when you recorded it. That's why I remember it.
I asked the question, what happens if we get more oxygen in our system? Will we think better? Will we jump higher, run faster? What happens to us? And the answer to that is no to all of those. We won't necessarily think better or jump higher or run faster. But we will be able to provide more oxygen to our body where it needs it, of course. And in those circumstances where the use of increased oxygen levels may be healing, okay? And so let's talk about that a little bit. And one of the big uses, common uses for hyperbaric oxygen therapy is in wound healing, okay? And there are several different kinds of wounds. There are traumatic wounds, you know, something you got, you fell over, you got bumped, you got in a car accident. But there are other kinds that develop, ones from, for example, radiation injury. And, you know, people are getting radiation therapy for a variety of things, and they can develop ulcerations from that, wounds from that. And some of those wounds don't have to be on the skin. Some of those are in the bowel or something like that. And this is very helpful in those cases, and I'll explain about it in a minute. So wound healing is a big, big, big reason for using hyperbaric oxygen therapy, particularly in our diabetic patients who oftentimes have wounds that do not get the correct amount of oxygen. The reason wounds won't heal, by the way, is because they either have infection, there's a foreign body, or they're not getting the nutrients that they require, and one of those nutrients is oxygen.
Well, diabetics also have a problem in some cases with circulation, correct?
That's what I'm getting at.
Okay.
The nutrients that they...
So it's just, you may have them in your system, but the system isn't bringing them to where it's needed.
Right. Diabetics frequently get what's called small vessel disease. In other words, the blood system, the arteries, et cetera, branch like a branch of a tree. But down to the smallest degree, the capillaries sometimes are not functioning well for diabetics, so-called small vessel disease.
So neuropathy and other
neuropathy and poor wound healing. Mm. Because when a wound occurs, and just think about this. Let's say you have a little crater on your leg, okay?
I know somebody went through this.
All right. So you have a little crater on your leg. In order for that to heal, two things have to happen. Well, several things have to happen, but let's talk about the oxygen and the way a wound heals. The wound has to heal from the bottom up, okay, from the bottom up. So it's a crater. It has to heal from the bottom up. And then the sides have to grow over it, okay? That's how it will heal and return to the normal function, okay? Before that happens, though, there's certain things that you need to have done. You need to make sure it's not infected, okay? And you might have to be sure that it's getting the blood supply that it requires. And if it is not, and we have testing equipment that can tell us that, okay, so-called transcutaneous oxygen monitoring, TCOMs, that we can measure the amount of circulation actually on the skin and the tissues around a wound, we can tell if it's getting the proper amount of oxygen. And if it's not, it's just not going to heal, Doug.
So this could be somebody who doesn't necessarily have wounds all over the body. It could be just in one area that's not getting the amount of oxygen that you would normally expect on a leg, on a limb, foot, hand.
Sure.
It could be different for everybody depending upon what it is.
Sure, wherever the wound may occur. And again, some patients with diabetes or other types of peripheral vascular disease, it is worse in some areas than others. A lot of times it's worse on the legs and extremities, but it can be really anywhere. And so how do we treat these patients? We can give them all the salves and ointments and treatments that we want, but if the basic building blocks that they need to heal that wound are not there, well, it's just going to stay there. It's going to be a chronic problem for them, and sometimes it gets worse. So in those particular cases, hyperbaric oxygen therapy is part of the treatment plan, or should be part of the treatment plan, where the patient goes into the chamber for about 90 minutes a day, okay, receiving this flood of oxygen into their system and into the tissue surrounding this wound, and then the other treatments that we're offering, antibiotic therapies, you know, various debridements, things like that, occur. And it assists, it's an adjunct to the healing process, yeah.
You have to go into the chamber for the entire body has to go in. It's not something you can just clamp something over a leg, over an arm.
Yeah, good question, Doug. Yeah, that's true because the oxygen that gets into your system gets in through the respiratory tree, okay? You have to be breathing it. You have to expose your lungs, basically, to this.
You're not just exposing the skin because, as you said, it comes from the ground up.
Yeah.
Or from the bottom of the wound up.
No. And people have tried that, and they found it doesn't work. You really need systemic treatment, not just local limb treatment. You need a systemic type of treatment to make it work. So wound care is a big, big issue. I've had in the past wounds that happened to diabetics that were basically there for years that were able to be healed with this particular therapy and the other things that we do, not just this therapy, but the other things that we do. But using this increased the success of our treatment. Yeah,
I did a little AI search on this, and since that's what Google tends to suggest these days, and it said aside from some of the things you're talking about, you would also use this for sudden deafness. That it could be used for that?
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that. It's sensory neural deafness. It's been suggested that if the standard therapy, which is steroid therapy, oral steroid therapy, prednisone or something, is unsuccessful, that hyperbaric oxygen therapy has, in some cases, restored the hearing for these people. That's a really oddball situation.
This is not for somebody who has a serious problem with deafness. So we're clear on here. You can't suddenly say to somebody, "Oh, you've been deaf since birth. We'll put you in a hyperbaric chamber." It will not cure it. It will not treat it.
No.
But this is something that's brought on by something else.
Yes, and it's called sensory neural deafness, and hyperbaric oxygen therapy in some cases has been shown to be helpful. No, the real, mostly wound healing is what we use it for. Now, I mentioned radiation wounds, and that's a particularly interesting aspect because radiation, when it's applied to an organ, let's say to your bowel area or to your head or to wherever they're applying the radiation, you know, it goes through the skin. You see, mm-hmm. Goes through the skin to the target organ, and in doing so, it creates damage. It destroys the small blood vessels in that cylinder of radiation, so-called radiation endarteritis. Now, for most people, after the treatment, nothing will happen. The skin will look okay. Sometimes you get a little redness or something like that, chronic redness, but it'll look okay. But if you go and injure that area, say you're in a car accident and it gets ripped off or you get stuck there, or suppose for some reason you need a surgery and they have to cut through that area to get to whatever organ it is that they want to get to, okay? That wound may not heal because that area has been destroyed. The radiation endarteritis will not permit enough oxygen to get into that incision site or whatever, and that wound will not heal.
So when we've talked about how wounds heal and the mechanism, it's destroyed the mechanism.
Yes.
That was not the intent, but it's a side effect of treating something else that's very serious. Otherwise, you wouldn't do it. And even people who may not get the burn or something there may need oxygen therapy later based on what you're saying.
Well, actually, in those particular
cases, something else happens to them.
Yeah. In those particular cases, if we know that you've had radiation to, say your abdomen, and now they have to make an incision in there, or on your leg, or something like that, what we usually recommend doing is taking several treatments of hyperbaric oxygen therapy prior to the anticipated surgery, and then follow the anticipated surgery with some additional treatments. And how many in all, we don't have to talk about that, but...
So you can, beforehand, you can artificially inflate the amount, not to be funny about it, I'm trying to figure the exact terminology. You can inflate the amount of oxygen that you have in your system beforehand and then after its treatment as well.
That's right. That's right. And I'll tell you where we see that happen most often is patients who have had radiation to their head or neck, and the radiation has, they've radiated their jaw. Okay. When that happens, okay, the bone of the jaw gets something called radiation, it gets damaged by the radiation. And if you manipulate that bone, how would we manipulate it? Well, say you need a dental extraction, and we got to pull out a tooth from that bone.
Or just chewing, I would imagine.
Well, not chewing so much, but any type of intervention like pulling, usually it's a teeth extraction, okay?
Okay.
In a jaw that's been previously radiated, you can develop what's called osteoradionecrosis. And what that big term means is the bone will start to melt away. It'll just go, and then you'll end up with having to get a jaw replacement. So in those particular cases, and most of our oral surgeons are well familiar with this because these made up a good number of cases that were sent to us for hyperbaric therapy, we would treat them with a protocol called the Marks protocol, where you took so many treatments prior to the dental extraction, have the dental extraction, and then following that, get another series of treatments. And we had tremendous success with that, preventing osteoradionecrosis.
And another reason why, when you go to the dentist, at least my dentists have always say, fill out your medical history. They want to know anything that you've had, because you may not think, well, you know, 10 years ago I had this. Well, they ought to know that, especially if they're a new dentist or you're a new patient to them.
Yeah, I think most oral surgeons, usually these are the guys pulling the teeth, really know that, because we've got...
They know that, but you got to tell them to make sure.
Well, yeah. You got to tell them. They should be asking you, have you ever had radiation?
Right.
And actually, sometimes it's because of the radiation therapy that the teeth have to be removed. They've killed the teeth. They've killed the nerves on the teeth, and the teeth begin to become rotten and cavities and such like that. So that's what triggers the patient to go to the dentist to begin with, is because these teeth are giving him a problem. And why are they giving him a problem? Well, because he's been radiated in the jaw.
But you can get treatment before and after certain types, especially in an area like that.
The jaw is extremely important to do that, or else you run the risk of having the bone, having been manipulated by pulling on the tooth and destroying some of the bone, developing this osteoradionecrosis and actually melting away the bone.
It's The Buzz with Dr. Z, supported by the Lung Disease Foundation of Central Pennsylvania. I'm Doug Herendine at WRTA. Before we get back to hyperbaric oxygen therapy, just a reminder about the Black Lung Clinic at the Foundation and what people need to know about that. This is for whom?
Well, Doug, we have at the Lung Disease Center an office for the Black Lung Clinic. It's run by my foundation, the Lung Disease Foundation of Central Pennsylvania. And that clinic is free to anyone who is a coal miner or a former coal miner. I guess maybe if you want to be a coal miner. And what we do there is we will take a history from you, and we will get an x-ray. And that x-ray will be read by a physician who is qualified to diagnose coal dust that he sees in the lung. We also do breathing tests, pulmonary function studies, and we check your oxygen level with an actual blood test. We actually take it out of your wrist there, both before and after activity, to see if it changes, and we get an EKG. And so all of that is free, and it includes a visit with me to explain what your tests were and such. And if we find that you have significant amounts of damage because of coal dust, we have access to attorneys locally who will take on those cases. They work for the state, or they work for the Department of Labor. Mm-hmm. And so if you have been a coal miner, if you are a coal miner, if you want to establish with our clinic, it's free. In fact, if you live at some distance, we even pay for the travel, you know. Please feel free to call us, and the number is area code 814-800-2309. That's area code 814-800-2309, and we'll set you up for a visit.
And I should point out, we'll have a podcast of this program up on WRTA.com later today, as we do every month when we talk with Dr. Zlepko, and we have that information on the podcast page, as well as information about the foundation and the center and the Facebook pages. So you can check that out, 814-800-2309. And if you don't know if you really would qualify to be checked out, you know, it doesn't hurt to call and ask, because it may pleasantly surprise you that you can get some help here.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
And again, the evaluation is free. The tests are free and the visit is free. So make use of it, you know. Why not?
Continuing on about hyperbaric oxygen therapy, where do we pick up?
Well, I just wanted to finish up a little bit on the use of it in patients who have been irradiated, patients who have had radiation therapy, and then we'll move on. The other area where this is apparent is patients who have had radiation, and usually it's men, but sometimes it's women, who have had radiation to their pelvic area or to their prostate area. When that happens, when those radiation therapies are given, they often touch on your colon, your small bowel, the rectosigmoid area. Well, that business of the radiation endarteritis, the destruction of the small capillaries, occurs then in the bowel. And when that happens, the surface layer of the bowel sloughs off, and these blood vessels then are exposed to whatever is walking past there and rubbing them and whatnot, and any injury they may get, and bleeding occurs, and as well as pain. And so radiation colitis, radiation sigmoiditis, radiation colitis is a common feature of patients who have radiation in these areas, and that's a common treatment plan. And if you do, you may have bleeding or pain, and the hyperbaric therapy is an excellent treatment for that. A lot of times we're trying to treat it with various injections of steroid therapies and things like that, but they're not always very effective. And hyperbaric oxygen therapy has been extremely helpful in many, many cases.
It's a crying shame that treatment has to have that many side effects, but it's better to have the treatment be alive.
Oh, I would not have the treatment for worry about this, but if you do have this, and it doesn't occur right away, by the way, it may occur months or even years after your radiation therapy. So if you're having this problem and you've had radiation in the past and you have bleeding now or you have this abdominal pain and whatnot, you really ought to get looked at. Now, you know, there's some other tests that need to be done. You have to have some scopes and things like that, make sure you don't have some other problems. But if it turns out to be radiation colitis, then this is an excellent treatment.
Yeah, and something to discuss with your doctor about your options on that.
Sure.
Make sure your specialists and your doctors are all on the same page, have all the same information before they make decisions based on what would be the best for your medical history.
Let me talk a little bit about the way in which we use hyperbaric therapy in an emergent circumstance, okay? Because wound care is not an emergent. I mean, the patients are ill. We want to get them some treatment, but we're talking about weeks.
Yeah, that's an ongoing problem that you know about.
Right.
And you have to fix it, but it's going to take some time. In an emergency situation such as?
Such as carbon monoxide poisoning. In other words, you know, this is the wintertime, right? So we see a lot of these home fires occurring.
Sadly,
and people exposed and to carbon monoxide. Carbon monoxide, here's how it works. Carbon monoxide takes over the hemoglobin in your red blood cells. I'll say it that way. It takes over that. And it does it 200 to 250 times greater, more affinity for your hemoglobin than oxygen does.
So we're talking more than just displacement. We're talking an attack.
Oh, yeah. It really loves your hemoglobin. So it gets attached to that. In fact, if I'm to be truthful, and of course I want to be truthful with you, Doug, is carbon monoxide attaches itself to any compound in our bodies that contains contains iron. Okay?
Obviously, your blood is going to, if you're normal and healthy, is going to contain iron.
You're right. But there's other parts of your body that contain iron as well. One big one are your muscles. Okay? Your muscles contain iron. That's part of the myoglobin that's in there. It contains iron. So when you have oxygen or carbon monoxide exposure, it's not only getting into your bloodstream, but it's getting into the muscles of your body. It also gets into some of the enzyme systems that are in your brain. So these, what we refer to these things as compartments, the brain compartment, the muscle compartment, the blood compartment.
And unfortunately, I think we've all heard from news stories of either, if not local people who are famous that have had problems with carbon monoxide poisoning.
Oh yes,
I can only imagine it's a terrible death, terrible way to go. And this is why you want to have the CO detector.
Oh, certainly you want to have that monitored. But if you're in acute circumstance, again, like a fire where you know you wake up and the room's ablaze or whatever it is,
or if you're a firefighter.
Or a firefighter.
You may use oxygen, or you may not have time to use it if you're not going all the way in. But if you're around it, you're going to be exposed to it more than the average person.
Yes. Now, when we talk about the carbon oxide attaching to your hemoglobin. How long does it stay there? I already told you it's very, it really likes your hemoglobin. So it's there 200, 250 times more readily than the oxygen. So the oxygen like that is not displacing it. But if you do breathe a higher amount of oxygen, let's say just what they put on your nose, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're going to displace some of your carbon oxide. How does this work? We look at something called the half-life, okay? And we don't get crazy about it, but if you're just breathing regular air, carbon oxide half-life is perhaps 6-8 hours, somewhere in that ballpark, okay? In other words, it takes that long for half of the carbon oxide that you've acquired to dissipate, to get off your hemoglobin. Mm. If you add a small amount of oxygen, you can reduce that time. You can reduce it to maybe just a couple of hours. But remember, if you're severely affected, a couple of hours is a long time for your brain, for example, not to be able to get oxygen because it's all taken up with carbon oxide, right, your muscles, your heart, okay?
Yeah.
So hyperbaric oxygen therapy reduces that half-life to about 15 minutes.
Okay. Wow.
Depending on which pressure you use, okay? So that, in a serious case of carbon oxide poisoning, is significant. Now, I want to tell you a story. This is a real story. This is a real case, actually, two cases in one instance that I had. There was a young man and a young lady who met each other at a dance or something. Now, this was in the wintertime. I won't say where it was, but it's in one of the local municipalities around here. And after the dance, they went back to his trailer. He had a trailer. He lived in a mobile home.
Yeah.
And the mobile home was heated by gas. Well, something was funky about the gas and wasn't burning correctly because carbon dioxide occurs in situations where there's incomplete combustion of fossil fuel. So they both got exposed to carbon dioxide, and they both became unconscious, okay? And just for sheer luck, okay, just by sheer luck, the police got them and brought them to the hospital. I won't say when this occurred, but it was quite a little while ago, okay? Uh-huh. Well, both of them were treated for carbon dioxide poisoning in the chamber, okay? Each in a separate chamber. The male figure, the male in this case, survived. The female did not. And the question is, I put to you why? And I'm going to tell you that I've already given you some of the answers to that, but I'll explain it in a minute. But that's what happened in this particular case. The male, who was a, you know, pretty good strapping guy, young guy, survived, and the woman did not. And let me explain what happened here. I told you that carbon dioxide is expressed in or gets deposited in various compartments of your body.
Right.
Blood, brain, muscles. This male, who had a lot more muscle mass,
absorbed in the muscles,
scrubbed his circulation of the carbon dioxide so that his blood, which was pumping to his brain and his heart, was still effective in providing oxygen therapy to there and such. Whereas the young lady, unfortunately, much thinner, less muscle mass, did not have that ability. And so she developed brain injury and heart injury and subsequently did not survive. So if you're a big muscle guy, you're going to be scrubbing some of that carbon dioxide out of your blood. It's not something you want to do. I wouldn't suggest you put on weight to do that, but in right. case that happens. But nonetheless, that's what happened in this particular case.
It's The Buzz with Dr. Z, Dr. George Lupko from the Lung Disease Foundation of Central Pennsylvania. We're talking about hyperbaric oxygen therapy. And earlier, during one of the breaks, I asked about something involving the bends, and the doctor said, oh, we'll get to that because that's something to consider in what might use hyperbaric oxygen therapy for that.
Yeah, Doug, obviously, the bends is something that occurs usually with divers, although we can sometimes see it with mountain climbers, actually, but usually with divers. And oddly enough, I had a case of the bends here in good old Blair County. You know, in order to get the bends, you have to be able to descend to a certain depth in the water. Well, the Juniata River, no one's coming up from the depths of the Juniata River with the bends.
All right.
Okay. But we do have some quarries in the area, which are fairly deep.
Ah.
And the story here that I can relate is a son and father who were diving in a local quarry. Now, one of the reasons that when you dive deeply, you come up slowly. You come up slowly so that the nitrogen in your body, which has increased in amounts because you're breathing this compressed air as your part of your scuba gear, right, has to come out of your system slowly. If it comes out quickly, it comes out as bubbles. And those bubbles can obstruct small blood vessels wherever they are in your body, in your brain, in your muscles. And this is what the bends are. This causes pain and discomfort, okay, because of this obstruction of the vascular supply to parts of your body. And you certainly don't want an obstruction of vascular supply, for example, to your spinal cord, to your brain.
Right.
That would be bad. So scuba divers are instructed in their various scales that they use, various measurements that they use, when they're coming up from a depth, if they've been down for so many minutes or whatever, that they need to ascend at so many feet, they have to stop and have a decompression area and stop again, et cetera, et cetera. Well, in this particular case, both of these, the son and the father were at the bottom, and they were looking around some old car wrecks, you know, these quarries, they'll have to throw some cars in there so they can have something to do. And something happened to his regulator. Something happened to his regulator, the mouthpiece where he's getting his compressed air.
Yeah.
And rather than the son sharing his regulator with him and sharing the mouthpiece with him, they panicked, and the son took him to the surface very quickly. And of course, he developed the symptoms of the bends. He started having muscle cramping and pain and pain in his joints and things like that. And the only way to really make this better, other than just waiting time, in which case you may be getting some damage, is through hyperbaric oxygen therapy by increasing the pressure of your environment again, squeezing down those bubbles, and then bringing you up and letting your nitrogen kind of come out in a very slow and controlled way.
Were they okay?
They were okay. They were okay.
Well,
yep.
That's good to know.
Yeah. But usually decompression treatments take a long time, several hours, as opposed to a 90-minute treatment for other things.
I suppose if somebody was having a heart attack or was severely injured, you might say, I've got to have to risk this. If you're thinking, wait a minute, we're low on oxygen, try to get out as quickly as you can without panicking, but well, it's human nature to panic in a situation like that.
Yeah, but
that.
As I say, if you develop nitrogen bubbles, and you will if you ascend too quickly, those bubbles can block off the blood supply to any organ of your body, and the one that is really dangerous is it can block off to your spinal cord,
right?
And you can become paralyzed.
I would think that's another reason I think if you did something like that, for whatever reason you got out as fast as you could, you want to get out of the water as quickly as possible, because if you freeze up in the water and you're not able to move, you're not going to do very well.
Yeah, once you reach the surface, your options are limited because you need to go back into some pressurized chamber. Your better bet is to actually go back down to a level where you're feeling more comfortable. I know that doesn't sound right, but
if you have the oxygen to do it.
If you have the oxygen to do it, to get down into a safe depth where you're not going to have any trouble.
We have just a few minutes. How do you want to finish up here?
Well, I was going to talk a little bit about some off-label uses, and you'll probably read about them if you go on the internet. You know, Dr. Google will tell you all about this.
Mm-hmm.
It's hyperbaric therapy is now being explored and used in these so-called longevity centers, where treatment with hyperbaric oxygen therapy is felt to either extend your life or promote well-being. As a matter of fact, there was a recent interview with former football star Joe Namath with O'Reilly, I guess it was.
Okay.
He said that he was, you know, football players get concussions and whatnot. He said that when he was in his, now Joe's at like in his 90s now.
Or at least 80s, if not 90s.
I think they said it was in his 90s, but he certainly doesn't look like the football player he was. But he still looks good.
And but he doesn't look
decrepit
either.
He seems bright and with it.
Yeah.
And he said that he was getting fuzzy back when.
82.
He's 82.
He's 82.
So back in his 60s, I think he said, and he decided to take this hyperbaric oxygen therapy, and he took about 40 treatments or so, and he said he felt better. And so he just decided to keep on taking it, and he took it for maybe 100 or so more, and he feels that it kept him from developing, you know, brain injury and the fog that occurs from some of these guys who have been hit a little too many times.
Or it could just be great genetics.
Well, it could be that.
Yes.
And that's why I'm telling you, this is fuzzy science here. I do know that there's data to suggest that these things on the tips of your chromosomes called telomeres, these little areas are supposedly have something to do with the aging process of your chromosomes. And preserving your telomeres is something that you want to do if you can. Well, hyperbaric oxygen therapy is reported to either preserve your telomeres or actually improve the size of them, okay? And that purported to be a way to slow the aging process or improve your health and well-being.
Now, here's the thing. If you have hyperbaric oxygen therapy, I mentioned Michael Jackson at the beginning of the show or Joe Namath doing it now, which I was not aware of. But are there any side effects to it aside from draining your wallet?
Absolutely.
If you don't have a medical reason.
Absolutely. Being in that pressurized circumstance, and we didn't talk too much about the side effects of this, but one I'll just mention to you, which we always told our patients, is if you have to take more than, say, 20 or 30 treatments, that being in that pressure will distort the roundness of your eye.
I would imagine,
okay,
amongst
other things.
Okay, it distorts
your roundness of your eye, and that distorts your vision. Now, most of the patients who would be treated for, say, 30 treatments or so, the eye will come back to its normal circular, you know, ovoid shape.
Yeah.
With time, and we told them, look, don't get your glasses changed, you know.
Because this is going to be an ongoing project.
Yeah, so wait for a couple months till after your treatments are over to see if your vision doesn't come back a little bit. Now, it doesn't make you blind, but it does, you know, you'll need glasses or something to correct that. So that's just one thing that actually can occur.
All right. And we're just about out of time. Final thoughts about this?
Well, hyperbaric oxygen therapy is available here in Altoona. I brought the science here maybe 20 more years ago. It's over in the wound clinic, UPMC wound clinic. If you're interested, call them. And if you have a problem, they can evaluate you for that.
And also the Black Lung Clinic is 814-800-2309. If somebody wants more information about that, we will have that information. And we'll have the links to the center and the foundation on the podcast page of this particular program coming up on WRTA.com a little bit later. Next time we get together, it's going to be St. Patrick's Day, March 17th, the third Tuesday of the month.
All right, well, bring us a tasty beverage, Doug.
We'll see about that. Now, we've got bottled water here.
There you go. Well, listen, this has been a real pleasure today, and I hope the listeners have learned something. Those that talk to me on the outside have figured out what hyperbaric oxygen therapy is all about.
Dr. Zlucko, thank you very much.